Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I'm here with my mum and we've got new headphones and mum feels like...
Do they suit me? Does my bum look big in these?
Do you feel like Jenny Murray now?
I do. I feel kind of... Yeah, I feel like a broadcaster, darling.
Mum, look... Well, you still like don't know how to speak into your mic, so you aren't there yet.
I feel like... Oh, Ruth's got her phone across the road.
Okay, we are doing a podcast. Mum's just nosying on the neighbours. Anyway, we have a really exciting guest today. He's tuning in from Washington, D.C.
Woo!
And he's the... Well, Mum, you introduce him.
Well, he is probably considered to be one of the most professional and talented correspondents for the BBC.
What did my dad say about him?
Hold on, I'm just going to tell you.
So my dad is a journalist.
He is top of the range correspondent. His coverage of Trump has been superb.
Brackets, and he's Jewish. L'chaim!
One of our own.
So we have John Sopel on the podcast. You would have probably seen him on the BBC, usually late at night, corresponding from DC, and he's written a whole book about...
A fabulous book called Unprecedented.
Which is all... Well, the...
About politics, pandemics, and the race that trumped all others.
It's kind of like a diary.
The detail is amazing, because I've read it, and he must have kept a diary right the way through, which makes me think maybe I should keep a diary of my journey.
Today... I had a poo.
No, today I had soup.
Today?
Yeah, what would Jesse
came
he's
over?
He's lucky. Yeah. It's amazing he's got so much content given there was a pandemic. It's mostly about his professional life, really. A bit about his family, which is really interesting.
So, John Sopel coming up on Table Manners, dialing in from DC. John, thank you so much for... What time is it where you are now?
It is 20 to 9 in the morning.
Okay.
Oh, have you had your breakfast?
Well, it's coffee and croissant time. So, you know, there's a lovely little French patisserie just up the road. And it really is properly French. And I can even go in there and speak French in there, well, badly. And yeah, so you get my croissant, get my coffee, and I'll do that once we've finished.
But you've had a bit of a night because you've just had your first grandchild born, yeah. So you've probably not slept. It's probably as stressful as election night.
Well, we have been on tenterhooks for a little while, waiting for the news, because the baby was 4 or 5 days overdue. But my son and daughter-in-law, they live in Sydney, Australia. And she's Australian. And so we've been waiting for news. So the news came last night. I have a granddaughter, which is spectacular.
Mazel tov.
Thank you very much. And it's very, very exciting. And I just fear that she'll be doing her A-levels by the time we're able to get to Australia go and meet her. I mean, it's tough, but, you know, there we are. It's fabulous news.
It's every parent's nightmare that your son will go on gap year and then meet an Australian.
I know.
What happened?
They actually met. They were at university. My son was at university in the UK. She was at an Australian university. And they went to America. They both met in an American university at UMass, University of Massachusetts. And we kind of thought, Oh, Australians. And she came to live in London for 5 years, and it was fabulous, and we adore her. And but then they bloody well moved back to Australia. And Australia
is fantastic.
And they're
laughing now, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I mean, they're living normal lives. Yeah. They kind of hear about all the craziness that we're going through on a daily basis. And look, they're blessed. They have taken a very tough, aggressive approach to people getting into the country, which means, you know, I have no idea when we'll be able to get in. But within Australia, people are leading pretty normal lives that are untouched by COVID.
You know, this is a really big moment in your family's life. Is there, being a correspondent, have you had to sacrifice and miss quite a few moments, or have you kind of been lucky? Because I can only imagine, because you have to be in, you can't be in two places at the same time. So
no, there have been moments where yeah, I've missed out on things. I was just laughing because I think if my wife was answering this question, Linda would say, yeah, absolutely. You were never there for swimming lessons. You were never bloody there for this. You didn't turn up for that. You missed the school play. And I would say I was there for everything that mattered, which is my narrative, and I'm sticking to it. There was a famous occasion where I'd been covering the war on the Israel-Lebanon border that had been raging. And we were due to go on holiday to Italy, and I was moving with the Israelis sort of across the border into Lebanon. And I was due on a flight out of the airport that evening to go back to London, and then we were flying to go to Italy. And I managed to get back. I told Linda, see, I did it. I've made it. We're going to be on the family holiday together. And we went to Heathrow Airport, and I handed over the passports. I have a spare passport because I need to have one passport that at any time that isn't getting a visa or whatever. And I had left my wife's passport at home. I had taken both my passports. Oh, I had taken the kids' passports. And so I was in a bit of trouble then.
What happened? And
she made one taxi driver in London the happiest man in the world when she said, it's to Hampstead in North London and wait and return. And he went, yes. You know, so she went with my son to go and get her passport. And my daughter and I were put on the flight, and we met in Milan a bit later on that day. So there are loads of stories like that of the chaos of getting back for things and trying to, you know.
We had a bit of that when you were growing up. So Jesse's dad is John Ware, who you might know of. And that we were often going on holiday on our own. Well, yeah. And he would join us later because
he nearly missed my birth, no?
Yeah. He was doing the miners' strike when you were born. I went on my honeymoon on my own.
That's so depressing.
We went on holiday with another family down to Cornwall when I got a call about the tsunami, and and so we were all going to spend New Year's together in this sort of, you know, out on the moors, roaring log fires. Except I went back to London the next day and got on a plane to Sri Lanka, and you know, and covered the horrible events unfolding in the tsunami. So yeah, look, things get disrupted, but my narrative is still, I was there for all the key
all the
events.
Important and that's things, yeah. So you're in Washington now and your wife is back in England.
Yeah, she's here at the moment. She came over because we wanted to be together when we heard about the birth of the grandchild.
That's nice.
So she's here at the moment. And then, so she's got a very elderly mother, and she just felt that she needed to be, a year ago, she moved back to London because she's got a very elderly mother. I thought I'd be on the road endlessly for the US election, and we had sort of various plans to meet, and all plans got trashed by coronavirus. And so, you know, it's been a year where I've sort of thought I would never be in this apartment at all, and I've been here virtually nonstop because of the restrictions on travel. So look, everyone has had a tough year. Everyone has got, you know, and you know, touch wood, the family as well, and that's what all that matters.
So how long will you stay on in Washington for?
Oh, I don't
how
know.
How much longer?
Not that much longer, I think. I think that two reasons. I mean, one, you know, normally an appointment as a foreign correspondent is for 2 years and then it gets renewed for another 2 years. I've been here nearly 7 years now, so I've overstayed my welcome. I think look, I have reported on half the impeachments in the whole of US history, which is another way of saying I have covered the 4 years of Donald Trump, which journalistically has been the most amazing experience. And
but challenging, though.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's exhausting and exhilarating. And you never know what's going to happen next. And you never know what will unfold. And then you kind of get Joe Biden come in and it's calm and it's quiet. And he's
boring.
Not tweeting.
Now.
You may say that, Lenny, I couldn't possibly comment.
It's like you're on holiday.
But I can remember you sitting in the press corps and standing up to talk to Donald Trump, or the president then, and he had it in for the BBC at that time.
Yeah.
And you stood up and he said, another beauty. And he was so rude to you. And I don't know how you didn't jump over and grab him by the throat.
Well, do you know what? I was absolutely determined that I wasn't going to back down, but I wasn't going to do what a lot of the American journalists have done, which is to think, right, I'm in a fight now. And I just very politely said, we're free, fair and impartial. And he goes, yeah, what, like CNN? And I go, well, we can banter back and forth. And then the conversation carried on. And eventually he said, stop. I know who you are. And then I got text messages from my kids saying, he knows who you are.
Does he know who you are, John?
I think he knows that he knows that I'm the Brit who asks stroppy questions from the briefing room. Because all during the start of COVID, he was giving these briefings, and to keep the briefing room at the White House safe, they only allowed, 11 or 12 journalists in at a time. And Donald Trump, because he was bored out of his mind and was desperate to be on TV, would come into the briefing room for literally an hour and a half, 2 hours, and just shoot the breeze. And you'd be asking him multiple questions. And he could never understand why we were asking difficult questions. Why couldn't we just be lovely to him? And the fact of the matter is, we've got a job to do, which is to find out what is going on and not to be either be a cheerleader or to be an opponent, but just to ask journalistic questions. So Donald Trump, you ended up spending quite a lot of time with him during this period. And it was really odd because he needed the attention. He needs to be in the spotlight. And it's almost like he doesn't mind whether it's good or it's bad, but he just needs to command everyone's attention and for him to be the person that everyone is talking about.
So attention's like oxygen for him.
Yeah, we were his ventilator.
Yeah.
to give it a COVID metaphor, was anyone ever less suited to be Donald Trump's ventilator than a bunch of reporters like us? But that's what he wanted. And because, heads of state were no longer visiting, he was no longer travelling, he wasn't going around the world, he wasn't doing his rallies in this early stages. And so he just wanted to come to have anywhere to talk. And so he came to the briefing room on a nightly basis, and it was unreal. And I was there that night where he talks about maybe we could inject disinfectant.
Oh, God.
And yeah. I was there that, and I was thinking, has he really just said that? I kind of think it must be one of the less interesting jobs as a press officer, to be the press officer for Domestos bleach. But that night, the press officer for the American version of Domestos, a thing called Clorox, is issuing a release overnight saying, whatever you do, do not listen to the President of the United States. Please ignore him. Could that guy have ever imagined when he went into work the previous day that that's what he'd be doing?
I mean, you spent so much time with him. I just, this podcast is about many things, but predominantly about food. Did he ever kind of host? Was there any food, snacks, drinks? Did he ever have anything particular that he needed on his rider?
Oh, my God, on his rider? Diet Coke, chicken wings, Max and fries.
Oh, wow, the contradictions there are excellent.
So he's teetotal.
Why is that? Did his father have an alcohol problem?
No, I think he had a brother who died who was an alcoholic.
Okay.
So he's not even drunk when he says these things.
No.
You may say that again. I couldn't possibly comment with my BBC hat on. He was absolutely sober. I mean, he did once make a very good self-deprecating joke. He said, I'm teetotal. I mean, can you imagine what I'd be like if I was drunk? This is me sober. So his food tastes are extremely simple. And, there were times when American football teams or whatever would come in. And in the Obama years, so I used to go to the Obama Christmas parties, and the tables would be groaning with the most delicious food cooked by the White House chefs. When Donald Trump held events for, visiting football teams or baseball teams or whatever, it would be chicken wings, fries. it was about as interesting as Meghan Trainor's choice of food when she came on Table Manners.
No comment.
Oh, I shouldn't have said that.
Pizza and pizza. So you pizza don't think Melania pizza. Was knocking up a little Slovenian national dish?
My guess would be not.
Did you ever meet Melania?
No, I didn't. I would have loved to have met Melania. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot, you know, look, she's a very interesting woman. She's also, you know, she's quite litigious as well. So you have to be pretty careful about what you say. And the only, it's very interesting. In America, all the news organizations are covered by the First Amendment, which is freedom of speech. And you can more or less say what you like and you will never get done for libel. The only two news organizations that Melania Trump has sued while she was First Lady and successfully was the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph. Because they don't have First Amendment rights. Melania is able to look after herself. I think the idea that was put around that Melania was this sort of
free Melania,
rather feeble, free Melania, blink if you can hear us. I think that was wide of the mark. I think she could look after herself pretty well. And, you know, there were one or two incidents where she got involved in some pretty brutal political knife fights and saw off people who she didn't like, who she felt were undermining her. And, you know, look, it was a complex. Everything about the Trump White House was unbelievably complicated. You know, so Ivanka, the daughter who's senior advisor to the president, doesn't get on with Melania. There is rivalry between the East Wing and the West Wing. And, you know, it was a complicated dynamic working in the Trump White House, to put it mildly.
I've read your book. Well, first of all, congratulations. It's a brilliant book. And did you. Have you always kept a diary? Because the amount of detail you'd have had to have kept a diary to.
No, I did. I haven't always kept a diary. And it was quite a tough discipline to make sure that you wrote it and kept up to date with it. Because obviously, there's no point. If you leave it for 4 or 5 days, you forget that intense feeling or the colour or the moment or where you were when you heard it. And so it starts to blur. And so I kept a diary pretty much every night. And of course, when I started writing the diary, I thought it would be an election of planes, trains and automobiles. Me rushing to here, rushing to there, Iowa, New Hampshire, wherever. And, you know, eating dinners in kind of crappy airport restaurants where there is very little on offer. Instead of which, the whole story changed because of COVID and lockdown and, you know, the kind of sense of also that very powerful sense of family being so dislocated. And, you know, so I had my wife living and daughter living in London. I was living here in the US. My son was in Australia and we couldn't get to each other. And so that was tough. And so the book changed. But it was also a story about how, you know, Donald Trump, I think when I started writing it, I thought would absolutely easily win the election, and how COVID came along. And because of his really erratic handling of it, and I think the American people who might have been minded to vote for him on the basis that, you know, the economy was looking good, just thought, this is too chaotic. I can't do it. And so voted for Joe Biden instead.
Did he really have COVID, do you think?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I remember that night, you know, being woken at 1:30 in the morning. I love it when London always ring you in the middle of the night, the news desk in London, and they say, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Have we woken you up? No, I was just partying, actually. No, you know, I've just come in from a rave, or, you know, I'm just going for a jog. And they told me that he'd got COVID. I think that Donald Trump knew that he would look weak going to hospital, and he hates looking weak. The White House has got a fully equipped surgery. There are 24/7 doctors and nurses on duty in the White House. Very different from Boris getting sick at number 10 when there are no doctors or nurses. I mean, it was almost negligent, the lack of attention there is to our prime minister compared to the president. So unless he was really sick, they would have treated him at the White House and wouldn't have taken him to Walter Reed. But I mean, that day on the Sunday, he was taken on the Friday. And on the Sunday, I'm doing a live for the news. And suddenly, Donald Trump is on a COVID. He's going up and down Wisconsin Avenue on a COVID joyride. And you think, you can't make this up. And he's, you know, passing within about 4 or 5 feet of where I'm standing and sort of waving out the window.
You're like, get away.
And I've done politics. Look, I've done politics you know, for 30 years in my BBC career, I have never seen anything or reported on anything like Donald Trump, and I'm pretty sure I won't
you
do anything like it again. No.
So what's the food like in Washington? You mentioned Cafe Milano.
Ah, yeah.
The place to go.
Yeah, Milano's a great place. My general take on American food, okay, I'm going to get in huge trouble now. I think the really top-end food is fantastic. So yes. Wow, will you pay a lot of money for it? And there are some lovely restaurants in Washington, like Milano, and there's a fabulous place called Lutice, which has just opened up the road. And because of COVID, they've been told they can install on the roadway, on the road, so they've blocked off one lane, and they've installed a series of greenhouses. So I've got a booking there tonight. So you sit in your own individual greenhouse and have dinner. So they've got a row of 10 greenhouses or thereabouts, and they can seat 4 or 6 people. And so I've booked a greenhouse for this evening for dinner. And that's
you take a photo.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And it looks really, they look really cozy and stuff.
Fabulous.
So you've got things like that. And there are some really amazing places in America. I mean, you know, when Linda was last over here, we drove down to Tennessee to the Smoky Mountains and this place called Blackberry Farm, which was, it is a working farm where they are making the, you know, they're growing the vegetables and the herbs and all the rest of it that you then have for dinner in the evening. And that was exceptional. And the burgers and the steaks and the fries are fantastic. But I often find that American food, it's got a drizzle of this and a jus of that, and it's got too many things going on. And, you know, the waiter comes over and very theatrically will say, well, on the menu tonight we have got this, and it takes him 10 minutes to go through all the complex foods that are kind of piling up. And I tend to prefer good, simple American fare because, I mean, look, the fruit and vegetables here are fantastic. You know, coming from the Central Belt in California or whatever, and, you know, some of the fresh meat. But you have to be discerning about where you go because you can get a lot that's quite generic.
Which is your favourite city to eat in?
Wow, that's a...
I love Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago. Chicago is such a beautiful city anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you want cities that give you a bit of a different flavour... I mean, Charleston is fabulous in South Carolina, it's the most beautiful city.
Is that where you went? Is it Beacon Drive-In?
Oh, no, that was I think that was in North Carolina.
I knew it was Carolina.
That was where, you know, with good marketing, this restaurant would have also had an Undertaker's next door because the food mountains were so high of fries, of fried food, there was no fresh vegetable, and you know, it was just a heart attack waiting to happen. And you could have just had, you know, the Undertaker's next door, where you know, this is where you would go to eat your last big meal.
Okay, well, on to Last Supper.
Oh, God, yeah, go.
Starter, main, pudding, and drink of choice.
Okay, so,
and would it involve any fries?
Well, possibly, actually. I mean, there used to be a restaurant chain when I was growing up called the Burnie Inn, and the classic was prawn cocktail, steak and chips, yeah, and Black Forest gatto. Now, actually, yeah, as a basis for a last... What's wrong with that? I think that's a pretty good last meal. I mean, because I'm a bit more metropolitan, I would probably have a ceviche to start with or something like that, or oysters, fresh oysters with a shallot vinaigrette. We lived in Paris for 4 years. So I've got, you know, from having lived in Paris when I was the BBC's Paris correspondent, I've got there's a bit of French food love there. If it's last meal, I think I would stick with the steak, medium rare, and some fries and a very crisp green salad. And I'd probably have to have some lovely French or Italian cheese afterwards. And it would be washed down by a very good bottle of Bordeaux. That would be, you know, if we're really talking money, no object. I mean, you know, I'm going to have a lovely, either a very good Californian Cabernet Sauvignon, there are some fabulous wines to be had here. Again, expensive. Or, you know, a lovely bottle of Bordeaux, a lovely bottle of Pomerol or something like that. That would be just heaven.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I want to ask, when you are all at home as a family, which may be quite a rarity now that your son's in Australia, who's cooking the meal and what is your family's kind of traditional dish that will just always be asked for?
Okay, so who's cooking the meal? Linda is cooking the meal. My wife will be cooking the meal. She's got a hands up there. Although Anna, our daughter, will get involved as well because she will say...
How old's Anna?
She's 28. And... There's a big Ottolenghi influence in the house. And so there's all these crazy ingredients that, you know, go in to make one of his dishes. I think, actually, if we were just talking about the standard fare of what feels like coming home, it would be a roast chicken and roast potatoes and lovely fresh vegetables and, you know, some sort of delicious dessert afterwards. That would be coming home food, and that's very comforting. But I mean, you know, when there's time, it gets more exotic than that.
Where did you grow up, John?
It's a good question. I grew up, my parents were social workers in the East End of London. So I grew up, the first 11 years of my life were in Stepney, and that was at a time when Stepney was a place you tried to escape from rather than, oh my God, it's so cool to live in Shoreditch. How could Shoreditch ever be cool? But it you know, then it wasn't. And so they ran this Jewish youth centre that was set up at the time of the First World War, when there was the influx of Jewish immigrants escaping the pogroms from Eastern Europe. And my mother had been to the LSE and then went to work as a community worker in the East End, which is where she met my dad. And they ran this place together. And it was really interesting because it was very ideological. It was about... taking these the Jewish community from Eastern Europe, and it was funded by the wealthy Sephardic Jews who had been in the UK for a long time and were terribly fearful that the influx of all these Ashkenazi Jews was going to upset everything, and that what you needed to do was to provide these people with an education and teach them to be good English men and women. And the youth club was called the Oxford and St George's Club. Now, what could be more quintessentially English than Oxford and St George's? And so on the one hand, I grew up in this Jewish youth club where obviously all the food you were eating was kosher. My mother had an extraordinary background in that she was my grandmother was a Russian Jew, had come over, and they were in northeast England. There was then some scandal. And my mother was born out of wedlock, and the scandal was such that they had to move. And so my mother was brought up on a farm in East Anglia, in this Protestant community.
How weird.
So on the one hand, my upbringing was sort of salt beef and Lutkers and smoked salmon sandwiches. But my mum would also make steak and kidney pudding and suet pudding and all the quintessentially English dishes and a lot of bacon and pork as well. So it was a kind of very mixed upbringing that I had, that it wasn't one thing or the other. So I spent the first 11 years of my life living in this community centre. So I grew up, you know, where there was a five-a-side football pitch on the roof. There was a ballet rink. There was a gymnasium. There was a squash court. And it was on, you know, in this area of Stepney. And so that's where I spent the first 11 years of my life. And then I moved to North Finchley, West Finchley, and in North London.
Did you have a bar mitzvah?
Yeah.
Who did the catering?
That's a good question. I had a bar mitzvah, and at the settlement, the building in Stepney, where I grew up, there was a synagogue in the basement. So I had my bar mitzvah there. But the reception was at the Conservative Club in North Finchley. And it was a lunchtime event, and it was going to be, you know, my mum had insisted that it was going to be fresh salmon and boiled potatoes and asparagus and fresh strawberries. And it was, you know, it was a nice summer day. All my school friends thought that was just going to be appalling. So my mum saved up all her luncheon vouchers. She was now the director of a charity in Victoria, funnily enough, a Church of England charity. And my mother gave all my friends luncheon vouchers, so they all went off to the Wimpy bar to buy themselves a Wimpy and chips,
and then
came back to eat their Wimpy and chips at my bar mitzvah.
Did you have a Wimpy and chips, or did you?
No, I wasn't
salmon?
Bloody well allowed. I had to have this poached salmon.
Whenever I say we talk about having a party, actually, my son always says, "Not poached salmon, Mum."
Quite right. Exactly. It's not party food.
Where will be the first place when you touch down in Old Blighty and restaurants are open? Where's the first restaurant you're going to go with Linda?
Oh, God. I think somewhere noisy. I feel a need to have...
Just an
atmosphere. There's an Italian restaurant and it's been there for years. And it's become quite well known now, but Cicconi's in Burlington Gardens, which just looks so wonderfully Italian. And it's got the white and black checkered, you know, marble floor and the crostini, and everything about it is so delicious. And I can just, the thought of having a Negroni and some lovely Italian food with a bustling atmosphere and the waiters in their white jackets coming round seems pretty fabulous. Alternatively, it's going to be going up to the Hollybush pub in Hampstead, which is, I think I first went to it when I was about 15 years old or 16 years old, which is when we were hanging out. That's where we used to go. And it's still a wonderful old boozer. And just having sort of, you know, a pint of prawns or something like that and a pint of beer would just seem like absolute total heaven. And those are the bits, of course, that I miss about being in the UK. You can't get decent bacon in America, and you can't get a sausage roll. And frankly, I told you, this is my mixed upbringing.
I'm
a nice Jewish boy. But all I want is a bacon sandwich with some HP sauce. That would be my idea of heaven. And you can't get that sort of stuff in here.
Do you bring your own tea bags over?
Yes.
They're so bad in America.
Tea bags, yes. Marmite, yes.
Branston pickle.
Branston pickle. So I could open the fridge door now and you'd see the Branston pickle and you would see the, you know, so the key bits of Britain. Actually, you can get most of it now here. You can, you know, there are shops that are international. Because Washington is such an international kind of city that most of the big supermarkets will have a little English section where you can buy some Yorkshire tea and you can buy the smallest pot of Marmite you've ever seen and you can buy a bit of Branston pickle.
I remember I put out a kind of search for Marmite when I was on tour somewhere in the States. And then for the future dates, everyone brought me, and they were always the minute little Marmites, which kind of worked because then we'd get through one and then we get to the next gig and somebody would have given me one. It was very kind. But yeah, you can kind of find them, but they are always tiny. But I wanted to know, have either of your children wanted to go into journalism, or have they stayed the hell away?
Neither of them are a million miles away from it. So my son's working in a TV production company in Sydney, and my daughter's working for TikTok.
Oh, wow. Are you on TikTok, John?
Yes-ish. Well, no, I haven't done it. I've never done a TikTok. Do you do TikTok?
No, I thought I was too old, but I'm loving this, that you are on it.
So my daughter's... So I've got to say that I adore my daughter to bits, but she's kind of, you know, she's seen me. I've had this career for 30 years, and you say, I'm interviewing the president. And she goes, oh, that's nice. And I said, yeah, and I'm flying on Air Force One. And she goes, oh, that's good. And I said, I'm going to be the lead on the 10 o'clock news. She said, oh, good. And I said, yeah, and I'm doing a podcast, Table Manners. She said, you're shitting me. No way. No way. Oh, my God, that is sick. And so all her girlfriends from when she was they're called Fosh, they just love your podcast. So
that
this is
really
the, this
sweet.
The
first,
so sweet.
So for the first time in ages.
You've impressed her.
I've impressed her. Yeah.
Well,
years,
you're very
it's been
welcome,
years I've
John.
Been waiting.
You're very welcome. Now, John, do you have good table manners?
Yes, I do. I'm nicely
brought up. Would Linda agree with that?
No. She'd say that. Again, my mum, you know, you could not put a milk bottle on a table. It had to be in a jug. You could butter had to be in a butter dish. There was and food had to be beautifully presented. I'm very polite and very well brought up, and I know which knives and forks to use, and you know all the rest of it. And if I was at a posh dinner, which occasionally I have to attend because with the job, I'm fine about those. But if I see the first sign of a knife and fork being put together suggesting that someone else is finished, and I see that there may be a little bit of, you know, meat left over or a little few fries on someone else's plate, I always think that food off other people's plates contains no calories. We know that. So you're able to take food from other people's plates and it doesn't cost you anything. See, now some might say that is bad manners. I think I'm helping.
I'm presuming you're not doing this with Joe Biden's plate, so it's all
No, it's at home. No, it's at home. It would not be, you know, but I don't mind if we're in a restaurant or, you know, oh, I fancy a bit of yours and swapping plates. I think that's all right.
Oh,
I don't
know whether Jesse is just the same person.
But I wonder whether this is a journalist thing, because my dad is exactly the same. My dad will be more interested in my plate.
He's greedy.
He's greedy. Yeah, no, we're both greedy.
Yeah.
But also it's menu envy, isn't it?
Yeah. So then order the whole menu and then you won't be jealous.
Jesse orders everything.
Oh, do you? You see, I should do that. You see, I think that I look at other people's food and I think, oh, why didn't I order that? Oh, that looks
well, that's
so
why
nice.
You should always get the pancakes for the side. Yeah. And then you get a little starter of the granola thing. And then you get kind of your main thing. And then you just you just pick and you have lots of bits and bobs.
When it's a big night like election night was, that November the 3rd?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've got to stay up all night. What fuels the whole night? Do you keep on having takeaways or do you have sandwiches or is someone cooking for you?
No one is cooking for me. Election nights, you just actually what gets you through is adrenaline. And then you have too much coffee and then you go all shaky and think, oh, my God, I can't. I'm now my hands are shaking and my heart. You can feel your heart rate going up. But it's broadly the adrenaline that keeps you going. And, you know, normally there'll be a blueberry muffin that you will say, I'm not going to eat that. And then you find yourself nibbling at it. And then you have something savoury. And then you have something sweet. And then you have some coffee. And then you have a Diet Coke. And then you keep broadcasting. And before you know it, it's, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. And you get 2 hours sleep because then you've got to start cutting for the 6 o'clock news and the 10 o'clock news. And, you know, and you just keep going all the time that you have to, and you're grazing. I mean, I'm just grazing on whatever is around, a little bit of cheese, a packet of crisps, you know, all that rubbish.
You like champagne though, don't you?
No, I hate it. Yeah, okay, I do. Look, there is no situation so bad that isn't made a little bit better by a nice glass of champagne.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and oh my God, there have been very, very few occasions over the past year where there has been an excuse to drink champagne. So when an excuse comes along, like a grandchild last night, we may have popped a cork of Paul Roger and had a lovely, you know, bottle of champagne between us that had been waiting for the moment. So, yeah, a nice glass of champagne. I do think it does make things feel somehow special. You don't drink it every night because then it would become commonplace. But I think every now and then.
Yeah.
Just to have a flute of champagne, there is nothing nicer.
No, I agree.
John, it's been such a pleasure to chat to you and just hear the insider info, and just your Unprecedented is out now.
Yes.
It's out, yep.
And everyone can read about his experience.
I've loved it.
But also just, yeah, it's been a pleasure to watch you on the telly with such kind of energy and just, you were so brilliant during, well, you're always brilliant, but it's always, I don't know, it feels like you're speaking. I know you're impartial and it's BBC and everything, but it's kind of, yeah, everything about it is so brilliant. It's always a pleasure to see you on the screens. What's next for you now that you are potentially going to leave DC?
Yeah.
Where will you go next?
I wanted to ask one other thing, because Americast has been so brilliant, your podcast. Will you won't carry it on now, or will you?
These are all big questions that you ask.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be in any way a politician or evasive or, well, time will tell, and I'm looking at whatever opportunities may come along and present themselves. I don't know. The podcast has been a huge success that I do with Emily Maitlis, and she and I have known each other for years, and we have a laugh and a giggle together, but hopefully deliver something that's, you know, a bit intelligent and accessible as well. There'll be something around that. I'm sure I won't just give up being in front of a microphone altogether. But I honestly, you know, what tops what I've been doing for the last 4 years of covering the Trump presidency, just as an amazing story, an amazing experience to cover. And so I've got to figure that out. But, you know, and maybe it's time to come back to the UK, you know, be able to go to the Hollybush pub and a few nice places that I love. So I'm kind of trying to figure it out at the moment.
Lastly,
yeah.
What is your karaoke song, John? And do you do karaoke?
You know, funnily enough, when Max got married, the lads took me out on the stag night and I had to do karaoke. And I think I did Born to Run, Bruce Springsteen.
Oh,
very good.
I love Springsteen. And I've seen him play a variety, you know, kind of all over the place, when we lived in Paris, when I was in London, here in the US. And so it would be me doing an appalling attempt at, you know, high energy Asbury Park, New Jersey sound of Bruce, you know, with Steve Van Zandt on guitar and all the rest of it. Yeah,
I think that sounds pretty great in rock and roll. Yeah. John Sopel, it's been such a pleasure to chat
so
to you.
Delightful.
Thank you very much.
Mazel tov on the birth
Thank
of
you.
Your granddaughter. I hope you have a lovely dinner in the greenhouse tonight on the road. I mean, it all sounds quite
I'll send you
peculiar,
a photo.
But I love it. Yes,
yeah,
please do.
Do.
And congratulations with your book.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been lovely talking to you.
I loved him.
Could have just kept talking.
He's so brilliant, so interesting. You want him at a dinner party, don't you? Would have loved to have had him over for dins.
I didn't even get half my questions in about Mummy Ivanka.
Mum wrote questions today. Such a fascinating man. Could have spoken to him about every port he's been in and just loved chatting to him and loved the idea
he
of...
He seemed a really nice man.
Yeah, really loved
yeah,
him.
Yeah, really... kind of genuine and lovely.
So I want to be going out for dinner tonight with him and Linda.
I'd go in a glass house, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd go in a bloody shed.
Honestly, I would as well. I'd go in anything.
Yeah, I'd go anywhere. Anyway, John Sopel, the book Unprecedented is out now. Americast is out. Go and listen to it. Go and read the book. He's fascinating. He's brilliant. That was such a pleasure to chat to him. Thank you for listening. Hope you're all okay and we'll see you next week. Mum, do you want to say bye to your fans?
Oh, bye, fans.
Thank you for listening. The music you've heard on Table Manners is by Peter Duffy and Pete Fraser. Table Manners is produced by Alice Williams.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.